When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Now the pitch. Swung in, lined to deep left field. It is four! You should see the celebration out of the Indians' third base dugout. A bullet, two-run homer down the left field line, clearing the 19-foot wall. We are tied at six.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
My God, like, I literally am sitting here with my arms and the goosebumps and the hair, like, for an iconic baseball home run that meant, I've never seen Cub fans in a worse mood, but my God, I love that call. It's and we talked to him about this a couple months ago when he was on the show. It's time now to go back to the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline.
And bring in the newest Hall of Fame broadcaster, the Ford Frick Award winner for 2024, our good friend, Tom Hamilton, nice enough to take some time out to talk a little baseball. Tom, officially on the air, I get to congratulate you on something that should have happened a long time ago. I know that's revisionist history, but again, congratulations to you and your family.
Well, thank you so much, Bruce, and thank you, Ryan. And yeah, I'm still flabbergasted. It's still surreal, and it's been a week and a half, but we're very thankful, we're very grateful, and very humbled. And I'm not just trying to blow smoke. It's just something you don't think about. You can't believe it when you get a major league job. I mean, that's still the greatest call in my professional life, when you got hired by a major league team. And boy, this is an awfully close second. But you don't get into it for awards or Hall of Fame. You know, I sure never even thought of that. I'm a kid born at a dairy farm in Wisconsin, not that far from you guys. So it doesn't seem like it's supposed to happen to people like me, but we're very, like I say, very humbled. It's just been amazing. And I heard from you, Bruce, and I've heard, literally, not to sound pretentious, but we've had over 600 emails, text messages, and that doesn't count the phone calls you've gotten from so many incredibly kind people, literally all over the world. And I'm still kind of walking around in a fog, and my wife doesn't have any problem trying to slap me back to reality. So that's why you always need to marry well.
The greatest testament in the world to any person is the friends that they have and the people that care about them. And as you said, you have hundreds and thousands of listeners. And I think, Tom, you know, without blowing smoke at you, because I don't have to, you know, we've been friends for a long time, the greatest compliment for a big league announcer is to know that people in other markets are listening to them and enjoying those broadcasts. What are your thoughts on that? I know I've texted you during games many times over the years, and you respond, and it's just like second nature. You just keep going on with your broadcast.
It's humbling, Bruce. I cannot think of any other word. I mean, one, you're doing your job. You know how lucky you are to be one of the few that get to do this job and literally get to do something every day that you can't wait to do. I mean, how many of us in life have a job that we don't feel like it's work? And I have felt that way for the last 35 years. And when you do hear that from yourself and other people from wherever, again, it's very humbling because, look, we all know in this world today of gotcha, you're 5 seconds away from your career going up in smoke. Mm-hmm. You could say something, and trust me, I've said plenty of things down through the years where you left that broadcast booth and you're either driving back to your home or getting on the team bus, going to the hotel and, you know, kicking yourself because you're like, you know, I didn't mean for it to be said the way it was said, or what was I thinking? You know, you make mistakes every night in a 3-hour live broadcast. And so you're also quick to realize that, you know, don't get too full of yourself because you're literally 5 to 10 seconds away from saying something that ends your career. You didn't mean it, or it came out wrong, whatever the case may be. So, again, I feel like we've truly, really been blessed.
Tom, I'm going to blow smoke because it's deserved. I mean, look, I'm 45 years old, okay? I have gone out of my way at times to find Tom Hamilton on a radio broadcast, okay? Because first of all, you know, I grew up a White Sox fan, so having Cleveland broadcast in the division obviously was something a part of normalcy. But now it's a lot easier with streaming and just the way the world works that I can dial up a Cleveland Guardian game and get Tom Hamilton. So, you know, I'm ecstatic for you. I know we don't have like a longstanding relationship or anything, but the way that you are able to bring baseball to life, to baseball fans, take Cleveland out of the equation, to Bruce's point, all over the country. Go back to that little kid that grew up on that dairy farm in Wisconsin. When you walk into the booth, How do you manage that responsibility that you have for Cleveland Guardians fans, for baseball fans, to continue after all of these years to bring baseball to life when there's a lot of different options out there and the attention spans are shorter and shorter by the moment?
Sure. Well, thank you for the kind words. I had really great mentors all along the way. I broke in with the late, great Herb Score, and we were together for 8 years before Herb retired at the conclusion of Game 7 of the 1997 World Series with the Marlins down in Miami. And Herb gave me, and I've said this countless times, Herb gave me, outside of my own dad, probably as much good advice as any adult has ever given me. And Herb was not a guy that was going to pull you aside and give you advice. He gave you advice if you asked for advice. Herb never wanted to impose himself on you. He treated me as an equal from day one when I was never his equal. And that was just an act of kindness that you can never repay. But he had, you know, we weren't very good. When I got hired in 90, we were sub 500. 91, lost 105 games, still the franchise record. And, you know, my first 4 years, there were, you know, a lot of bad games and a lot of bad records. But Herb kept saying, you can never let the ball club's record or the way they're playing or any of that impact that night's broadcast. Because when you turn on that mic, there's somebody out there, and trust me, I've had letters from people that are shut-ins or are blind. And for them, that broadcast is the highlight of their day. It's what they look forward to most each and every day. And so you owe it to those people. And those were the words from Herb that, you know, carried me for 35 years. I never forget those words from Herb each day I step into the booth. And again, tell you what, Ryan, you want to realize how quickly you can lose your job. Listen to some of these kids in the minor leagues. There are so many good young play-by-play guys that haven't caught the break yet that I caught. And trust me, there's a great supply of tremendous young play-by-play guys that you take it for granted. You'll be replaced tomorrow and nobody will remember your name.
Not in your case, my friend. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
The Sammy Sosa news broke yesterday that the Cubs and Sammy are getting themselves together. Nobody broadcasting games over that steroid period probably had more of a difficult job to jump in and out of what might be, what could be, what was, what wasn't, than Tom Hamilton, who had so many great power hitters in the 90s and early 2000s to talk about. And again, when the news starts coming out in the early 2000s about steroids, how as a broadcaster, how as a reporter, how as an important person announcing those games, did you walk in and out of that conversation?
Probably not as well as I wished I would have, or maybe how I would today. I mean, Bruce, it was kind of uncharted waters. I think all of us obviously knew something was going on. One, records were being broken that were once-in-a-lifetime records, and then they lasted a year, and then somebody else came along and broke them. And all you had to do was look at the size of some of these guys to realize, well, wait a minute, you know, how many times did we get a story in spring training from whatever organization, whatever team? Well, this guy put in a lot of work during the offseason, you know, he's gained 30 pounds of muscle. And then you would talk to a strength and conditioning guy off the record who would say, that's literally impossible. Cannot happen without some kind of chemical help. So, you know, it's not for me. And again, Herb taught me this, and sometimes I have not followed that the way I should. But sometimes we get to a point where we feel like we're God, judge, and jury in that broadcast booth. And you got to be really careful about that because none of us really know for sure. I used to wonder why it was only the baseball writers that voted for the Hall of Fame for the Major League players going in. Now I'm so glad it's only them. I don't know how I would vote on any of this, guys. I really don't. To me, you're still very much conflicted. Look, and I'm obviously not going to name names, but I know of people that are in the Hall of Fame based on what I've been told by their peers, not by broadcasters or writers or anybody else, but by their fellow players. There are guys right now in Cooperstown that, you know, had help from a chemical substance to get them to where they're at. They just somehow weren't outed, weren't caught, whatever the case may be. So I just don't know what the answer is anymore. One, I'm thrilled if Sammy and the Cubs are mending bridges, even though I don't have a horse in that race. Look how much. Well, I'll tell you one real quick thing. Guys, we were so isolated in Cleveland from the strike lockout of 94-95. The bitterness that took over our nation towards the game of baseball was not evident in Cleveland because we were so good in 94 and 95, went to the World Series. And so for the first time in 40 years, people had a ballpark and an incredible team to watch. And so the strike embitterment, if there was any in Cleveland, it was quickly dissipated because they didn't want to miss that great ride. The rest of the country didn't have those same feelings. And say whatever you want about how they got to where they got. One, at that time, a lot of that was not illegal. There right. was not testing. What did Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa do for the game of baseball? They encaptured the country with that home run chase. They had people falling in love with the game again. It was must watch, must listen to baseball all around the country. And I don't think Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa have ever been given enough credit for how they helped heal some of the wounds that that baseball strike inflicted on the fans. And so for that, I'm eternally grateful because no matter what comes out after the fact, that doesn't take away for the theater and the drama that, those two guys gave us.
And that's why you're a Hall of Famer, because I can't agree more with what you just said, that what they did for a game, because to your point, Tom, there was a lot of bitterment here in Chicago. The White Sox were one of, they had the best player in the game. They had a two back-to-back MVP. And then all of that, it's the what might have been the 1994 Chicago White Sox. And then after that, it got broken up. And to this day, there are still people 30 years later that are upset about it, and rightfully so. I wanted to ask you one follow-up question about Sammy, because the Indians were here in June of 1998. So I don't know if you recall. I don't know if I'm assuming you were on those broadcasts. Sammy actually went 0-for-9. It's like the two games in June of 1998 that he did not homer. He had 20 home runs that month. But I just wanted to ask you about what the feeling was like, because you're sitting there in a broadcast booth, I'm assuming, at Wrigley Field in that era, in that in that moment of 98, and in a historic month that Sammy's on. How do you? How do you not get romantic? How do you not fall into that trap that everybody was in? What was that like?
Everybody was. And I think the thing too, guys, Ryan and Bruce, that was the first time anybody was really chasing Maris. When it lost its appeal was when Mark McGwire's record lasted, 15 minutes, and then Barry Bonds was breaking it.
Yeah.
And so to me, and we had it, with Albert Bell. Now, in 98, he was no longer with the ball club and whatnot. And as you know, he was then in Chicago. But when Albert Bell was in his heyday with Cleveland, I don't care if you were a broadcaster, if you were a fan, it didn't matter. You would not miss any at bat because you didn't know what you were going to miss. You might miss something you would never see again. To me, that's the way it was with McGwire and Sosa. And the amount of pressure that those guys must have had on each other's shoulders to try to break the record. And then, quite honestly, if you break Roger Maris' record and you don't end up leading the league, as great as Sammy's year was, everyone talks about Mark McGwire because he ended up with more home runs than Sammy, who had, you know, a season for the ages. So to me, it was just, you cannot miss any of those at-bats. And we were so lucky, even though he didn't do anything in that series, as you mentioned, I didn't realize he was 0-for-9. But just the anticipation of, oh my gosh, he's on deck, and maybe the inning ended and he would lead off the next inning. Well, that meant that whole inning, you just couldn't wait for that at-bat.
With the interleague play starting the year before, was that the first time that Tom Hamilton ever broadcast at Wrigley Field?
Yeah, it was, wow. Bruce. I had been there, you know, not that many times. I'd actually been to the old Comiskey Park much more than I'd ever been to Wrigley, just driving down from Wisconsin. If you remember, now I'm really dating myself, but when the Milwaukee Braves left after the 65 season, then the Chicago White Sox, and I wouldn't know the year or years, but the White Sox, in an effort maybe to boost attendance at their own place, I don't know, we thought they were just being really nice to Wisconsinites, they would play, you know, a game from a series. And I got to see Mickey Mantle. My dad took one of my brothers and myself. It was first time we didn't sit in the bleachers. So it was like, all right, we're rich now. We're sitting in the seats by first base. So, and dad pointed out to us, that's Mickey Mantle playing first base for the Yankees. Great, one of the greatest players ever, but his knees are shot, and I'll not forget that. The
68
Yankees and White Sox.
Or 69, Tom. That
is that when it was, Bruce?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because 70, the Brewers showed up, I believe, in Milwaukee, right?
Well, yeah, Mike Keegan, my longtime partner, was on that Seattle Pilots expansion team in 69. They were in spring training, near the end of spring training, guys, and Mike said, the truck was packed, and the truck was told, we'll let you know whether you're going from Arizona to Seattle or to Milwaukee. They didn't know until the end of spring training that they were going to become the Milwaukee Brewers in April of 1970. So, yeah, that and I'll never forget my 1 year at Comiskey Park was 1990, and then the White Sox Park opened up in 91. We're in the broadcast booth, Herb and I, and this gentleman comes in, takes our shoes, and polishes our shoes. 3 innings later, brought our shoes back to us while we're broadcasting
the game.
That was me. It was.
I was trying to break in any way I could, Tom. Any way that I could. Tom, have a tremendous holiday season. It's always such a great joy to have you on and just to talk baseball with a guy who's never lost. You know, I think that the thing about you and Pat and so many of the broadcasters that I'm friends with is you've never lost the idea that you're a fan of the game and that you're able to relate to everybody no matter how many games you've done professionally.
Well,
and I think that's really the key to being a great, successful broadcaster who's loved by fans like you are.
Well, that means a lot. Thank you, Bruce, and thank you, Ryan. And Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and whatever your listeners are celebrating this time of the year. We thank all of them, too, for listening and making our lives, you know, so wonderful. So, guys, I always appreciate the support and time. Call anytime.
Appreciate you, Tom. Once again, all the best, and congratulations to you and to your family for this awesome honor.
Thanks again, Ryan and Bruce. Have a great winter, and hey, we'll see you in Arizona, right?
Absolutely. The great Tom Hamilton, the 2025 Ford C. Frick winner. You know, we've been talking a lot about Sammy Sosa, Bruce, and we're going to continue that conversation with Chip Carey here in just a few minutes, but I think he eloquently put it. You know, he stated it perfectly for a guy who's in the game, who's calling these broadcasts, that here he is, almost, we're 26 years removed from 1998, and he's still saying, yes, things happened, but those two guys don't get enough credit for the theater and the drama and the eyeballs they put on a great sport. So I thought he summed it up well. Speaking of, we will have Chip Carey, who's now the voice of the rival St. Louis Cardinals. We'll talk to him about the Cardinals, but certainly his thoughts, he called so many of those magical moments of Sammy Sosa in 1998.
Who gave you the greatest advice in baseball? I know Tom said it was Herb Score, his great broadcast partner.
Man, that's a great question. Yeah.
Was it Jimmy Dugan in League of Their Own?
There's no crying in baseball?
No, that's not the one I'm thinking of. After he signed an autograph, I think, for the little kids.
Yeah, I think that's, I know which one you're talking about. Who's yours? Think about that. We'll both think about that, and we'll come back with that. We have we got bonus coverage today on Inside the Clubhouse, taking it up to NFL football. Today is the NFL doubleheader of the Texans at Chiefs, followed by the Steelers at Ravens. Doubleheader coverage begins at 11:30. We'll take you right up to kickoff here on The Score and the Odyssey app.
I got mine already.
You do?
Don Zimmer. Bruce, keep your mouth shut and your ears open. You want to be a good reporter? That's what the good reporters do.
That is that's as good as it gets right there.
I never listened to him, though.
Yeah, you're still trying to get that done after all these years. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey. This is Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, it's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. We all know sleepers can win you championships, but finding these guys takes time. That's where the Sleeper King comes in. Let me do all the research so you don't have to. Every week, I'm going to break down which sleepers you need to pick up off the waiver wire and which surprise deep sleepers could help you win the week. Every episode, just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
That man, Mr. Bill Murray, looking in, rooting for 61.
Bill won.
Swung at, belted, there it goes! Number 61, move over, Maris!
Look at those folks waiting for number 62.
The net's almost unfair. The 2-1. Swung on, there she goes! Number 62! Move over, Big Mac, you got company!
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app.
Back on Inside the Clubhouse, Ryan McGuffey and Bruce Levine. And I'm telling you, Bruce, we have played some of the most iconic calls today in the last hour here. Whether it's Chip Carey, our next guest, or Tom Hamilton. Man, I got goosebumps, man, in the last hour. So 61, 62, like, having those calls and just being able to make those calls in the same game. We've been talking about Sammy Sosa since we went on the air at 9 o'clock, and now we go back to the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline and welcome in the great television voice now of the St. Louis Cardinals, the rival St. Louis Cardinals, but the great Chip Carey. Chip, thanks for joining us. Happy holidays to you. And we've been talking about Sammy and the apology and the Ricketts family allowing him back at Cubs Convention all morning long, and obviously there's a lot of emotions with it. Some people are ecstatic, some people not so much. But as we walk down memory lane, what were your, you know, memories of 1998 and the seasons that followed with Sammy Sosa and the home run chase?
Well, hey guys, thanks for having me on, and Merry Christmas to both of you. Happy holidays to both of you and your listeners. You look, 98 in retrospect for me was emotional on a lot of different levels. Mm. Obviously, Harry had died, and I was trying to fill unfillable shoes and trying to fit in with his partner, his producer and director, Arnie Harris, his crew, his team, his booth, his microphone, and the greatest gift that a new announcer in a new market can get, irrespective of your last name, is to have a fun and exciting team. And the Cubs in 98 were all of that and more, in large part because of Kerry Wood and his amazing breakout and his 20 strikeout game. And then, of course, what Sammy Sosa was able to do in the Cubs team as well. You know, for me, I look back at 98 with a whole lot of joy. I don't look at my life through the lens of what we know now in the moment. And at the time, for me to be a 33-year-old kid in a big market doing Cubs baseball at Wrigley Field and watching what Sosa and McGuire were doing, especially after all that had happened to our game in years prior, I thought it was a blast to be lucky to possess the front row seat to what Sammy and the Cubs were doing every day. It was a great coming out party for me, doing national TV with a great friend still and a wonderful partner in Steve Stone. And again, that Cubs team surprised a lot of people, had a great year, and got to the playoffs after game 163. And for me, it was one of the most enjoyable baseball seasons I've ever had a chance to cover. And, you know, Sosa and Kerry Wood and what the Cubs were able to do is the big reason for that.
So, Chip, first of all, thanks for coming on and always being a great friend. Really appreciate it so much.
Of course. Happy to help you, Bruce.
Yeah, thanks. And, you know, I guess as a baseball fan and a broadcaster yourself, after you have all these great calls, after you have this great season, and then you fast forward to testing in baseball for steroids, revisionist history as to what people should have and should have not done. Looking back at those calls, looking back at that time, how did the broadcaster react to all that? How did the fan of the game react to all that?
Oh, well, look, I think we all had suspicions, but nobody proved anything. And we all know that what was legal in one place wasn't illegal in another. And there really wasn't a unified, shall we say, stance in the sport as to what could be done. Outside the sports world, there were very different rules and regulations, quite obviously. And I think it's funny that the people who have clutched so many pearls are the people who benefited revenue-wise, and I haven't seen them exactly going back and say, well, we should probably give some of the money back to the fans that feel cheated. That hasn't happened, has it? So, look, we operated in a different world. It was, in many ways, I think, the wild, wild west. We don't know everything we think we do, and I guarantee you that there are players who are probably using that we'll never know used, and that's an unfortunate era in our game. As far as the Cubs thing is concerned, look, that's between the Cubs and Sammy Sosa, but as someone who was part of that and someone who saw what Sammy meant to the franchise and the fan base. I'm glad that he's been welcomed back. I'm glad that his mea culpa was accepted. And I think it's best probably for all parties to move on, because you're not going to, as I said, rewrite history. There's no point in trying to revisit it. And it's also disingenuous to say that Sammy Sosa wasn't the bell cow that was ringing up cash registers, not just in Chicago, but all across the game. And so I think it's great that he's back. The Cubs fans who adored him and loved him and appreciated what he did for the town, the team, and the city, and the sport. Look, I think it's great that he'll be back in the fold of the Cubs convention. He'll get a roaring ovation, and I think he deserves that.
Agreed, because I've said, you know, on record, I said on this show that I think he is as responsible for Wrigleyville as it stands today than any human being that's ever walked through that stadium. I think Wrigley.
Yeah, well, you know, if you think about it, you know, Harry obviously, Jack.
Sure.
But Harry especially made Wrigley Field.
I'm talking Wrigleyville, though, like the whole
beer garden, right?
Yeah.
People came in, right? The investment and the time, and look, hey, we need a place to eat after the game.
Yep.
Well, it created opportunities and business zones and all of that stuff. Yeah, there's no question about it. It helped put not just the Cubs and Wrigley Field on the map, but you're right, Wrigleyville as well. I mean, I've been back now the last 4 or 5 years, and I'm just amazed at the incredible changes that have taken place around the ballpark. It doesn't resemble at all what I was used to seeing back in 1998. Yeah. And it's great. I mean, it's great for the city. It's great for the area. It's great for the sport. And I think you're right to not give Sammy his due with regards to the almost immeasurable contributions in that way, I think is grossly unfair.
When did you know? I mean, we saw guys, you know, prior to 1998, you know, quote unquote, threaten Roger Maris's record, you know, into June or maybe even July. But when did you know that, okay, this thing's alive and well and very real come post All-Star break when we get back to baseball?
Yeah, I mean, for me, what, you know, a guy hits 20 home runs in a month.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's you know, that kind of opens your eyes. If I remember correctly, I think he hit a home run at Tiger Stadium in the old ballpark, and it was like 440 to center field. It was one of those just ridiculous bombs. It was like, this is unreal. And for me, look, we're in the entertainment business, right? We have no control over what kind of team is put together, who plays, who doesn't. That's out of our purview, but our job is to try to sell the product on that particular day. And the great beauty of it as an entertainer was it was like a heavyweight prize fight, right? Sammy and the Cubs would play at 1 o'clock. He'd hit his home run or his two home runs, and then everybody would go to their TV and watch the Cardinals wherever they were playing and watch Mark McGwire to see if he answered with a haymaker or two of his own. It was just great theater. And the back and forth between the two of them was so amazing. And the fact that the Cubs were in St. Louis when McGwire broke the record was, I just think, so great. What's so great about our sport, right? The perfect symmetry of that moment. Two guys going toe-to-toe, two teams trying to fight for a playoff spot, two guys going mano-a-mano for one of the most hallowed records in all of our sport. And it happens in St. Louis, another great baseball town where the fans love to boo the opposition, but also love to applaud great feats from guys that are playing the Cardinals. It was just a great, great moment for me personally. Joe Buck was on the call for the Fox Network. His dad, Jack, was doing the game with Mike Shannon on the KMOX radio side. And Steve Stone and I were there with the Cubs, with Pat and Ron on the radio side. And as I said earlier in our chat, we all had a front seat to history. And what a great ride concluded that night against Steve Traxel at Old Busch Stadium.
Chip, the saddest thing to me is that Sammy never got the credit for becoming an outstanding hitter, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All of his hits were not home runs, okay?
Right.
He learned how to hit to right field. Jeff Pentland, the great hitting instructor at that time, who was also Barry Bonds' coach in college, was a big part, instrumental in convincing Sammy to hit the ball the other way. It's sad that he doesn't get that recognition. Only the home runs are talked about. Only performance-enhancing drugs are assumed. Talk a little bit about the hitter that he became.
Yeah,
I think we lost Chip here for a second.
Yeah. Strong arm. And in his later years, I mean, we used to joke about you know, Sammy was, you know, how to honor Sammy Sosa, you know, when you retire his number, where do you put it? And someone joked, you know, put a circle in right field because that's a spot he never moved from defensively. You know, put one of the batting circles out there. But look, he played hard. That's the thing I really admired about Sammy is every day he came out and played hard. He ran hard to first base. He ran hard to the outfield. He put on a show. He understood that, as I said, this is the entertainment business. And I don't know how educated Sammy was, but he was one of the most street smart guys I've ever been around in the game. He knew, you know, when Harry was behind the microphone, you know, he would always say, they pay you to run hard to first base four times a day. And Sammy was smart enough to understand that in a blue collar town like Chicago, the surest way to get people on your back is to not play hard. And he gave 100% every single day, whatever that 100% was. And for that, I have the ultimate respect for him. He was, in many ways, the show, the reason people watched Cubs baseball in some of those bad years, and I had plenty of them after 98, was because they wanted to see what this guy could do. And there wasn't a thing he couldn't do on a baseball field when he was right.
I know you don't script your calls, but we bumped into this segment with 61 and 62, and like both of those calls, like in the moment for what they were at the time, were just so iconic. And when like listening back on them, you know, 26 years, I just love hearing them again because we have a different perspective and appreciation of what that moment was. When you were getting close to 60, 61, 62, what was your emotion like? How did you, because you knew it was everybody was watching. It wasn't just Cub fans anymore. You had the entire world watching. And you just happen to nail these two calls in a moment where it's unpredictable. Baseball's unscripted, as we know.
Yeah, well, those are maybe the only two that I got right. well, you know, look, if, for the guys that sit in our chair, your biggest fear is screwing it up, right? I mean, that's the job, right? Is when the moment happens, those are the things that people remember. They don't remember the routine ground ball to second where you mispronounce the second baseman's name. At least you hope not. When those big moments come, that's when you are supposed to be at your best. And I pride myself on being able to nail that moment. I never script them. They just come out the way that they come out because it's like when Harry, he said, instead of saying holy S word, he would say holy cow. That's kind of how he naturally reacted to something really cool that happened over the course of his life or the course of a game. But look, at the end of the day, our job is to hopefully underline the moment or highlight the moment or put some punctuation to it and then get the hell out of the way. I think the biggest compliment that Steve and I ever got was from the late, great Paul Harvey, who was watching our coverage of the Sosa-McGuire game in St. Louis where Big Mac broke the record. And I think I screamed, he did it, which is probably what 80% of the audience was going to say. Was it the most glamorous or wonderful thing or most well thought? Like Al Michaels, do you believe in miracles? Of course not. But after that, we shut up. We didn't say a word. If you go back and look at the tape, we didn't say anything on our air for, I think, 9-10 minutes. And there was nothing else for us to add. And that was the great lesson Vin Scully always talked about, is the power of the crowd and the power of the visual image is going to be far more impactful than anything you can say after that moment has happened. And Paul Harvey commented on that and complimented Arnie Harris and Steve Stone and me for being able to have the moment, capture it, and then get the hell out of the way and let the moment speak for itself. And I'm really, really proud that we did that. And really, really, as I said, happy that we were there in that moment in St. Louis.
Well, you've been doing it for almost 30 years or more now, Chip.
I'm 33. I hate to admit it. It's 33 now.
Well, you started when you were 12.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
And you've been doing it great all those years. Chip, happy holidays to you and your family. Thanks so much, Ryan, and I appreciate you hopping on with us and revisiting this time that is being obviously a pretty big story here in Chicago.
It's great. And to the fans, thanks for letting me be a part of the great ride and loved every minute of it. And I'm really, really grateful that so many people like you two have been so kind to me and my family and so accepting of me trying to fill those unfillable shoes. It was a great time and even better days ahead for both of us, I'm sure. And I echo what you just said. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas to you and your listeners as well.
The great Chip Carey joining us here on Inside the Clubhouse. Just really good perspective of a guy who is front row seat, Bruce, of the 1998 Cubs. And there's certainly a lot of text. I will say this. The one thing the texters agree on is the Chip Carey calls, and they were very, very appreciative of having Chip on. We got some more stuff to talk about.
You mean the text line doesn't agree with
us? It's the first time all day that I think we have unison on the text line. which is it's nice to see. It's good this time of year that people can appreciate each other.
The only real strength for the continuing of this show is not me or the co-host, but the great passion of the Chicago baseball fans, and their opinion is always welcome and wanted every Saturday, 49 to 50 weeks out of the year, talking baseball here on The Score.
Speaking of which, we have bonus coverage. Bruce and I are going to 11:30 in NFL kickoff between the Texans and Chiefs. Will Roky Sasaki be a Cub? Well, they took a step closer into making that happen. We'll discuss what that means next with Bruce Levine, Ryan McGuffey here on Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app.
Ryan McGuffey, Bruce Levine back here with you on Inside the Clubhouse, taking you to 11:30 up to kickoff between the Texans and Chiefs here on 670 The Score. And right before the break, I mentioned that the Cubs took a step closer into getting Roky Sasaki on board on the north side in 2025. Bruce, I know that his contingent and a big Cubs contingent met yesterday.
Yeah, the reports out of there is that they met, but you know, there's going to be 29 other teams that meet with Joel Wolf, the agent, and Sasaki, the pitcher. About a 23-year-old, that's not going to cost a lot of money. First of all, that's going to be under contract control for 6 years that without a lot of money, that throws 97 miles an hour, that has a tremendous splitter, that could be the next great Japanese pitcher to come over. So reporting that the Cubs are in this thing and met with him yesterday, I didn't really think it was a big scoop on my part to report that. They were going to do this like any outstanding franchise out there doing their due diligence. The White Sox are doing the same thing. So I rarely say that my story isn't a big story. I don't think it is. You know, happened to find out, you know, through an agent source that, you know, they were meeting yesterday and that they're putting their best foot forward like you'd expect the Chicago Cubs to do.
And it'd be a bigger story if they did not meet with him, they weren't meeting with him. But I will say this. I've been very almost against getting Roky Sasaki because of his agent saying, oh, maybe he needs a soft landing spot. We don't have time to play the clip, but I did a little deeper dive. And the reason was he's been getting beat up by the Japanese media for whatever reason. They've been really hard on him over in Japan, not here in America, in Japan. And that he thought maybe that would help because of how beat up he's been. He's a young guy still, as you mentioned. That, to me, makes maybe Chicago a little bit more of a feasible destination because, as we know, the Japanese contingent makes the trip from Japan over to the West Coast rather easily. If he gets away from the coast and comes closer this way, I mean, the Cubs have a long success of having Japanese players. Look at the guys on their roster right now with Suzuki and Shota Imanaga. So
I know we have a great bite from Joel Wolf talking about it. Tyler, do you have that bite from Joel Wolf talking about where Sasaki would like to end up, how he'd like to end up? Pull that out. This is Joel Wolf, the agent for Roky Sasaki, talking about at the winter meetings what might be the best place or places for Sasaki to go.
He would consider small to mid-market teams?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that there's an argument to be made that a smaller mid-market team might be more beneficial for him as a soft landing. Might be. I'm not saying it will be, but I don't know how he's going to view it. It might be beneficial for him to be in a smaller market. But I really don't know how he looks at it yet because I haven't had a chance to really sit down and, you know, discuss it with him in great detail.
That clip compliments of Marquee Network. So when I heard that at first, I'm like, well, then I don't want anything to do with this guy. But when you hear it more in context, that's why you have to have context. Maybe Chicago is not a small market, as we know. The Cubs are not. They have a lot of attention, a lot of eyeballs, a lot of fans. But maybe he needs a soft landing spot that's not the West Coast, is my thinking. That's just like what I'm thinking here.
Well, the White Sox, you know, I've been told, you know, off the record, that the White Sox are just as interested as everybody else.
Sure.
Hope to have their seat at the table. Is that the way Kenny
Yeah.
No, that was
this
Rick.
Time of year.
That was Rick.
This time of year, yeah, you're always hoping to have a seat at the table somewhere.
Rick said the White Sox deserve a seat at the table back in the day, and they certainly do. And is Ryan, before we go to break here, is that a softer landing, even though it's the same market?
Of course.
Go to the White Sox and be a part of their rebuild.
But I don't know why he would do that. I mean, you're coming over here to win. Why would you leave that league to come over?
So you're assuming the White Sox don't want to win?
I'm telling you they want to win, but they're not going to win. Like, that's just where they are.
Ever, is it what you're saying?
No, I'm telling you in 2025.
Well, this guy's around for 6 years.
Yeah, well, that's why you have to make it. I would be more, you have to be upset if they weren't going for him. If Chris Gets came out at the winter meeting and said, we're not going
for
him.
I mean, look, I'm being the devil's advocate here, but just for conversation, please. But you're probably right. I mean, he's probably not going to go there, but that's not going to stop them from trying.
And they shouldn't. They're going to have to get ultra creative and figure out how to land
it. But, you know, hats off to the Cubs for being the first one announced out there that has met with Sasaki, because he would look really great in that rotation, a power arm with a bunch of really good pitchers on that team that could take them another level up.
Oh, it'd be an absolute difference maker. All right, we're going to talk about something that was a real hot topic this week in baseball with the number of injuries, especially arm injuries, that have just been on the ridiculous increase here the last 2-3 seasons after COVID, and mostly tied to velocity. And we have a guy, Dr. Glenn Fleissig, who's from the American Sports Medicine Institute, that's going to join us to talk about why this has become a baseball epidemic. On the other side of the break, he's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey at 670 The Score.